Summer is a time for fun and relaxation, but for some low-income families facing food insecurity, there can be added challenges. With school out, it can be harder for some of those parents to get access to healthy and affordable meals for their children for whatever reason. Today on the West Side, we'll talk about the term summer food insecurity, what it is, what it means, and what is being done to help alleviate the challenges it brings. This is the West Side. Thanks for tuning us in this Monday morning on Ideas Network stations 88.3 WHWC in Menominee, Eau Claire, and 88.7 WRFW. It's a beautiful summer Monday morning right now. In the studio joining me is Sue Brown and Emily Moore. Sue Brown is the Food and Nutrition Director for the Eau Claire Area School District. Sue, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you. And Emily Moore is the Executive Director of the Feed My People Food Bank. And Emily, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Good to have you. And joining us by phone is a late addition to the program, but we're excited to have him, David Lee. He is the Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin. David Lee, welcome to the program, and thanks so much for taking part.
Thanks so much, Rich. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Listeners, if you have a question or a comment about summer food insecurity in general, meals through the school, Feed My People, anything, if you've got a story to share about some of the challenges you might have faced helping feed the family with limited means, let us know. You can be as anonymous as you'd like. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page, and I will do my best to get your comments, your questions on the air. But first, before we begin the discussion, we've got a setup piece produced by our intrepid WPR intern for news and the West Side. For some kids, summer vacation means less access to the free and reduced-priced meals provided through their schools. But in western Wisconsin, a food bank has started using mobile food distribution sites to reach these kids and their families. WPR reporter and West Side producer Abby Ivory Gagne visited one of these sites just last week.
Cabbage, honeydew, cantaloupe, lettuce, tomatoes, crackers, onions, milk, watermelon.
That's what was on the menu Thursday when Feed My People Food Bank hosted a mobile food pantry at Longfellow Elementary School in Eau Claire. Angela Fisher from Eau Claire came to pick up food for her daughters. They receive free and reduced lunch during the school year. Fisher says she wants to make sure they have healthy meals year-round.
It is harder in the summer, yes. Being home every day, they eat a lot. They're growing girls.
Volunteers set up food distribution outside the school and try to make sure some items like milk don't get too hot in the sun.
You can have as much lettuce as you would like.
Terry Fellens was the volunteer handing out lettuce.
We try to give a wide variety. And every week we have a little bit more than the week before.
Tammy Syverson works for Feed My People. She says the mobile food pantry is available to anyone in need.
Anybody who is having a tough time providing the healthy foods for their family that they would like to be able to provide. So we encourage anybody where money's a little bit tight, where food is hard to come by, to come and take advantage of this great opportunity.
Syverson says about 50 families are served each week. The mobile food pantry is open every Thursday at 11 until August 17th. Abby Ivory Gagne, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thanks for that, Abby. And a reminder to our listeners, we're talking about summer food insecurity and the overall issues that some folks face struggling to provide nutritious meals for their families with the means that they have at their disposal. If you've got a question or a comment, 1-800-228-5615. Joining us by phone, Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin, David Lee, in studio with me, Executive Director of the Feed My People Food Bank, Emily Moore, and Sue Brown, Food and Nutrition Director for the Eau Claire Area School District. So, with that kind of as a primer here, let's talk about what summer food insecurity is. And I'm going to start with you, Emily Moore. This is a new term to me, anyway. I had never heard it before. So can you help walk us through what it means?
Sure. So food insecurity is really addressing that uncertainty of where food is coming from. And not having any food is really just an awful situation to be in, but it's also an awful situation just to be unsure of it. And that is particularly a problem in this summer because, well, as you know, during the school year, there is, for children, the school meal program, and that goes away in the summer.
Mm-hmm. But I was looking at Sue Brown, I was looking at the Eau Claire Area School District webpage, and it looks like there are some meals available.
Correct.
How does that work? And is that similar to what happens during the school year?
Well, it's somewhat similar. Our meal patterns are very similar, but these we have the Summer Food Service Program starting today, available at 6 school sites, Flynn Elementary, Lakeshore Elementary, Locust Lane, Longfellow, Mann's, and Northwood Elementary Schools. These schools are having summer school at this time. Mm-hmm. Meals, breakfast, and lunch meals will be available for students free of charge at those sites. So anyone 18 and under, we have school in session at those sites, but anyone in the neighborhood, anyone in the Eau Claire area, you do not need to be an Eau Claire resident. All you have to do is be 18 or under. So we invite people to come and eat our meals.
Okay.
The programs are available Monday through Thursday. And the meal service times breakfast is available from 8 to 8:45 and lunch from 11:45 to 12:15.
And that just is starting
today.
It's today. Okay.
So this is great timing.
There is a lapse as well for the people that are searching that out. David Lee, with regard to summer food insecurity, I mean, obviously this is an issue at all times of the year for people in this boat, but What can you tell us about the differences during the summer? I mean, I don't know if other school districts have similar programs that might start up later or sooner. What do you know?
Sure. So as I think Emily was alluding to, during the school year, kids typically eat lunch at school, right? And so if you are a moderate or low income, you can qualify for the free and reduced lunch program. And because kids are in school, they typically just eat lunch with everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. So participation in that program, which is a federally funded program, is fairly high. I think nationwide in our state, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 95-98%. It's really, really high. So that means most eligible kids are eating lunch at school. However, when school is out in the summertime, kids aren't eating lunch at school anymore, right? Because school is out. They should be out playing or, you know, doing the things that kids do in the summertime. And despite the fact that the USDA has implemented a program like the Summer Meals Program, which is really supposed to meet that gap between the out-of-school time that summer is, participation in that program is a little bit lighter because kids aren't just at school. Right, they have to get to a place. They have to get to the school, like Sue mentioned, mm-hmm. And so they oftentimes experience potentially some barriers, such as transportation and knowing where to go in order to eat those meals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, transportation, I could imagine, would be a real issue in parts of. I mean, even for the Eau Claire School District, there's a lot of people coming from outside of the city centers.
Definitely. Transportation really is one of the barriers to giving students access to meals year-round. You know, in the school, during the school year, we have school buses, we have parents dropping off, and kids are also walking. During the summer, schedules change, and it is more difficult for students to come to the sites. So, but we do have many students in our neighborhoods that are coming to the school sites now that might not be actually attending the schools.
That is interesting. And also, just from a planning perspective, how can you plan for that if you don't know how many people are going to show up?
That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. We work very hard to have enough food at all of our schools. We also have an excellent prime vendor, so we do have backup there, and we do have freezers available in all of our school sites. So it is more of a challenge to plan and prepare the amount of food that we have. And but we do encourage all kids, and all are welcome, and we will have enough food for everybody.
So says Sue Brown. Emily Moore, I wanted to go back and talk about the situation at Longfellow that Abby attended, the mobile meals program. Is that specific to Longfellow Elementary? Which, for background, for people that might not realize or know, Longfellow has the highest percentage of free and reduced lunch students that qualify for it or families that qualify for it. So is it specific to that area, or do you go beyond the city into outside?
That's just is a site, and our truck is there, and the meals, there's bagged meals for the kids to take home, because as you just heard, the summer meal program is Monday through Thursday, but there's a gap then again until the following Monday. So there's a bag of food for children to have, as well as you heard on the broadcast there, milk and lettuce and produce of various sorts and other things. And that's just it's a convenient site. We thought it would be a good site because the children are familiar with the program. It is also the school that has the largest number who participate in the privately funded program that Feed My People offers, which is the bags of food for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good site. We knew the kids would know about it. We hoped they would share that with their families and come back to a very familiar spot for them. But the program itself is open to anyone who wishes to come. And in fact, people do come from even outside the Eau Claire area sometimes.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering about, you know, we're talking about transportation as an issue. We've got a lot of schools, a lot of people that have kids in school districts in our listening area, way up in Barron County or far, far away from any kind of urban city center. What kind of options do they have? I mean, I know that you can't speak for the specific districts or the different food shelves or food pantries or whatever, but what kind of challenges might they face? And does Feed My People have a reach that can get to some of the corners of Western Wisconsin?
Yeah. Feed My People works in a 14-county area, so right. Some of the areas you just mentioned. We also provide support to the programs in those communities, and many of them have developed programs that they've seen working in Eau Claire and in other areas in their local communities. So, for example, the weekend, what we call a backpack program, where children take home food for the weekend,
mm-hmm.
There are 33 programs outside of Eau Claire, Chippewa area doing similar things and getting food from the food bank.
And Emily Moore, you mentioned the privately funded, that kind of piqued my interest. Isn't it all privately funded since you take donations?
Yes, right. So I was that was in contrast to the government programs.
The summer nutrition program.
Correct.
Okay, mm-hmm. I got you. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got questions about where to get, where to find access to some meals, if you're in a situation where you are in need, basically. 1-800-228-5615 if you'd like to share a story. If you've got questions for Emily Moore of Feed My People Food Bank, Sue Brown of the Eau Claire Area School District, or David Lee with Feeding Wisconsin. Let's take our first break here. We've got a caller on the line, but we will get right to them in just a bit. We're talking about summer food insecurity and just food insecurity in general and the programs that are available to help those that could use a little bit of a boost keeping food on the table. 1-800-228-5615.
Support for WPR comes from WEA Member Benefits, building strong communities by enhancing the financial lives of Wisconsin public school employees, exclusively serving the education community for more than 40 years. WEABenefits.com.
A very short break. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side. Thanks for tuning in this Monday morning. We're talking about summer food insecurity, the issue, some of the challenges facing parents that might need a little help feeding their families during the summer. A lot of people in our backyards, this is one of those invisible problems that you just don't see it. You know, you expect that someone would be in this boat is someone that you would see on a corner or something with a sign, but it's not like that at all. 1-800-228-5615. I'm joined by David Lee, Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin, Emily Moore, Executive Director for the Feed My People Food Bank, and Sue Brown, Food and Nutrition Director of the Eau Claire Area School District. Well, looks like we may have a bit of an issue with our phone system, but keep trying. You can also post on the West Side Facebook page, and we will get your question or your comment on the air. So I wanted to talk about, I found us, or Abby Avriganya, I should not take credit for her work, but found some national data that shows that only 1 in 7 children who needed summer nutrition received in 2016. So we talked about the transportation issue, but I wanted to go back to you, David Lee, and ask, why might that be? Why is there such a gap? I mean, is there any kind of stigma involved, or, you know, what can explain that number?
Yeah, so I think that that's a great question. You know, I think transportation is the biggest one, right? Like I mentioned in my first comment, during the school year, kids are already in school, and so it's really easy to feed them or to provide meals for them at that time. But in the summertime when, you know, parents are working and school buses may not be running, it's hard to get them to these centralized sites where the meals are being distributed, whether it's at a school or at another community organization. There's also, you know, some stigma in going to in identifying yourself as somebody who needs meals during the summertime. And so there have been some really great efforts to relieve that stigma, where everybody, as Sue had mentioned, is welcome to come eat so long as you're under 18. And then the last thing, which I think is really important to take note of in our state, is oftentimes weather is a problem, right? Like, sort of external environmental circumstances. So if it's too hot, if it's too rainy, it's hard to get folks to come out to a site to have a meal outdoors to play. If in some neighborhoods it might be a little bit dangerous, you may not want to have a meal site that could be, you know, kind of tricky to manage, right? So there are a lot of different sorts of barriers that make it hard to promote and to run this program efficiently.
So you mentioned there's, for the school district, it offers the meals to whether the students are in the summer school or not.
Correct. These are open sites, so they are available to any student that would, anyone under 18 that would want to drop in and have a meal. We've had stories of parents or grandparents coming in that their kids are hungry for our school meal pizza in the summertime, and they see that the pizza is on the menu that day, so they bring their students in. So it really is open to anyone.
And this is just kind of that gave me a flashback of when I was in school. Are we talking about those rectangle pizzas?
Not anymore.
Oh, I love those things. You can never
They're triangular. Them. Well, you can stop by and eat with us someday.
I am too old.
No, you're not. Well, for summer, but you can come during the school year.
Oh, okay. Excellent. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call if you've got a question or a comment about summer food insecurity or the options that are available to families in need. This data that I'm citing came from the Food Research and Action Center, and it found that the number of children participating in summer nutrition programs decreased by nearly 5%. This is nationwide from 2015 to 2016. So, David Lee, again, you know, we know that the economy is improving. Is this good news or is this bad news that there is kind of a slight decrease going on out there?
I think it's good news if it's decreasing for the right reason, right? And I don't think we actually know whether or not it's right. Decreasing for the right reason. Certainly the gap between the kids who are participating in the school time meals and the summer meals is still a problem, right? I mean, I think it's somewhere on the order of 2 in 10 who participate in the school meals also get summer meals. So there's 8 kids who are otherwise eligible who are not getting those meals in the summertime out of every 10 kids. So the need is still out there, and we want to just make sure that kids who are hungry in the summertime have access to meals. And if I just may, you know, I think there's oftentimes this perception that hungry kids are basically just running around being hungry by themselves, right? They actually belong to families that are likely food insecure because they make at or near the poverty line, right? So just because we're talking about summer hunger, that it sort of is a proxy for this other deeper issue, which is that there's still far too many families and individuals in our state who are food insecure, who go from day to day not knowing where the next meal is coming from.
Absolutely. And then you hear all these stories. I mean, with all the costs of everything, increasing medication, health care, et cetera, I mean, you know, I've heard stats that it's so a number of people are only one big life-changing situation away from being in this boat. Mm-hmm. So it is good to keep that in mind as well. David Lee, I wanted to bring up the Wisconsin Food Security Project, and this is something that you are involved with also. I believe it's run through UW-Madison, and forgive me, I didn't have a lot of prep time to get up to speed on this, but what is the Wisconsin Food Security Project? What's it all about?
Sure. I think you might give me a little bit too much credit. We are tangentially involved with some of the folks who are running it, specifically Judy Bartfeld from the Institute on Research and Poverty at the university. She's the one who is the brainchild and the one doing all of the hard work. We just happen to sort of orbit in her superstar periphery. But the project really is aiming at mapping the real need of food insecurity in counties throughout the state, right? So you can go to their website, type in your address or your county, and see what food security looks like at your county level and your local community where you live. So you can actually see how much need there is in your area.
Yeah,
I think most people would be surprised at how much there is.
It's an amazingly powerful set of data there because just minutes before the show, I dialed in Eau Claire, Chippewa, Barron County, and Dunn County, and typed in food share, the percentage of food share benefits. And I think Dunn County was pretty close to about half of the population being eligible for, and I don't know if that's eligible for or actually receiving them, but either way, that's pretty staggering numbers.
Absolutely, and I think that's true in most of the state, particularly in some of our rural communities, right? So, and I think, you know, when there is, for better or for worse, all of this talk about federal nutrition programs and how we should or should not be supporting them. But I think when you think about the level, you don't just become eligible for these programs because you want to be, right? You are eligible because you are making somewhere on the order of $25,000 to $30,000 for a family of three. So you're not making a lot of money. These are means-tested programs where you have to be, where you're not earning enough money to make ends meet from month to month, week to week. And I think this really is indicative of a deeper issue of how folks are doing in our local communities.
Do we think, and I'm going to go to Emily Moore, but maybe Sue Brown, and well, all of you can chime in, but do we have any data, do we have any insight into how many people that are in this boat that could use help but might not want to, might not be able to swallow their pride or just might not feel comfortable accepting help? Emily Moore?
Yeah, I don't.
It's hard. It's probably a hard number to get.
It's an excellent question, and I think that my greatest concern are the people that you're describing, that really is an issue to overcome societal attitudes towards being in a difficult situation, as so many people are. And I think we try as much as we can to make it as comfortable as possible because more people who are not getting food who could use the help than there are people who shouldn't be asking for food that, occasionally maybe do.
Right. And Sue Brown, with the free and reduced lunch program, I was on that when I was in high school, and it helped tremendously. And for me, it was a complicated mix of emotions because I knew that I didn't really understand what it meant. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think about it. I knew it meant that my lunches were cheaper, which was great. Mm-hmm. But there was a little bit of unease because other people would be paying in cash, and I had this little card that I swiped. So what do you have to say about that?
We do everything we can to keep the information confidential, and it is confidential information. Right now, we're using a computerized accountability system. So our computer is randomly assigning kids PIN numbers. So each child is the same. As they go through the line, they each type in between a 3 and a 5-digit PIN number. There is nothing that says that kid is on free, reduced, or full price meals. Some students have money in their account, so there are some students that are eligible. They're not eligible for free or reduced price meals, but they don't have cash with them because they have money in their account, or they might have money for meals and then they'll pay cash in the a la carte line. So,
with summer food programs through the school, mm-hmm. Is it mandated, or is that something that the district offers?
No, this is something that the district offers, and the sites that we're offering the program are those sites in our school district that are eligible. So as many schools as are eligible to be open sites and welcome anyone in the community, we're offering that program.
So for the nuts and bolts funding side of it, is this some kind of a grant that the school district has to apply
for? It is the Summer Food Service Program. It is called a grant, but it is a USDA program, mm-hmm. so it is funded fully by the federal government. So there are differences in what we can do versus what the Feed My People can do. It's nice that you provide the bags for people to take home. Our program food cannot be taken home.
Oh.
So it has to be consumed on site. So we're under the umbrella and have to follow all the regulations for the federally funded programs.
Because the reason I ask about whether it's mandated or how mm-hmm. the funding works is this Food Research and Action Center found that there was nearly a 5% drop overall nationwide in the number of food service program lunches served during the summer from 2015 to 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of forces would make a district decide to get rid of that?
You know, I really don't know, because we want to make food available to as many of our students as are eligible. We might, excuse me, this year we were actually able to have one additional site. Sometimes if an area might not be eligible anymore, so a district may not be able to do that. There might be economic factors at work in certain communities. There might not be enough participation at certain sites. There just really are a variety of factors. Transportation could be an issue at some sites. And I agree completely with David that transportation can be a huge issue.
Right. And how is that overcome? I mean, is that something, because in any type of program, when we're talking about need-based, mm-hmm. for whether it's homelessness, whether it's hunger, transportation. So what, David Lee, what can be done to help that issue with transportation? I know that there are ride, maybe share programs. Is there anything that nonprofits or school districts or whoever can do to help?
Yes, I think you've alighted onto a really, really important question, right? And if I could just sort of tie up a couple of streams that we've been talking about over the last few minutes, whereby the summer meal program is a program that is authorized through the USDA and authorized funded through the Child Nutrition Act, which is a federal piece of legislation that gets looked at and rewritten every 5 years. And a funny point of fact is that the Child Nutrition Act, which funds the school meals program, the school breakfast program, summer meals, and a whole bunch of other important child nutrition programs, was started in the 40s as a response to the fact that kids were not being fed well enough, or they weren't well nourished enough to be in the military. It was actually a national security problem that the American government was trying to fix by creating the school, the Child Nutrition Program.
Wow.
Yeah, so really cool, right? So every 5 years, Congress comes together to look at these programs and figure out how to improve them. So in this most recent child nutrition bill was supposed to be passed 2 years ago, and because our Congress is, you know, doing its thing, they sort of continue to punt it every year. And we have we've been supporting some improvements to the child nutrition bill that would address some of these transportation issues, such as allowing nonprofits to serve summer meal programs by driving a truck to rural areas, right? If you could prove that you couldn't get enough participation in a rural area because the population is a little too dispersed, they can't get to a common site, then could a nonprofit, say, such as Feed My People Food Bank, I'm not promising anything, Emily, don't worry, drive a truck and deliver summer meals, right? Or could we also pilot potentially a summer EBT program? So the EBT program is basically the SNAP program, right?
Some states do that, don't they?
There was a pilot a couple of years ago whereby if you were a family with children, during the summer you'd get an extra $20 on your food share card. So that you could just buy the extra food you would need to feed your children. It was more than $20, but you know, it would just allow families, it would give families the resources to buy more food to feed themselves over the summertime. And so these are some of, I think, the more, and this is not to say that we would take away from the very solid, that these programs would take away from the really solid programs being done in communities where the summer meal program works really great. But there's just some communities, as you mentioned, in some of the rural areas of our state that just have a really hard time getting kids to schools during the summer so they can take advantage of these meals.
That is really, really interesting. And that kind of brings up another question I've got for Sue Brown. With the school district, the way that the summer nutrition program is set up at, in the Eau Claire Area School District is that we begin August 1st, or the 31st of mm-hmm. July. Why not earlier?
These sites have our higher percentage of free and reduced price meals, and we also have summer school in session at the sites.
Oh,
so they're more,
they
yeah.
Yep. That's when the summer,
that's when the summer school program
Could
starts.
The district afford to stretch it out?
It would really be, and it is a funding issue, that it would be very difficult to do that. You know, we have, right now we have the mode of transportation, we have enough students participating in the program, and we have a high enough population at those sites that usually eat the free and reduced price meals during the school year. So it would be a very difficult funding challenge for us, and in an era of and difficult budgeting issues.
We're going to definitely get into budgeting issues in just a bit. And right now I'm going to take a call from New Auburn. Aaron, you're the first caller of the morning. Sorry, Aaron, I stole the call from our call screener, but you're on the air. So what's your question, Aaron?
All right. Well, I'm going to ask. I don't mean to put a damper on the feel-good tone of the interview here, but you know, in my experience, when I look around, I see everybody looks so overfed rather than underfed. And you know, in my experience, and you know, they say 70% of the food stamp budget is spent on soda. So I guess
sure.
I'm just curious where all these hungry people are that you're talking about. You know, it just doesn't look that way when you see everyone that you know around.
Sure.
I don't know. That's my question, I guess.
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear. Thanks. I appreciate the question, Aaron. And this kind of transitions into some of the debate over the summer nutrition or the nutrition programs in general, whether it be SNAP benefits, you know, food share in Wisconsin, or school lunches. So what about that? I mean, Lord knows I look a little overfed myself, but I used the program when I was younger, and so I'll start with Sue Brown, and I want to get everyone's take on this. Mm-hmm. Is free and reduced lunch, let's just start with that, is that data a true indicator of poverty? Or are there people that might be able to take advantage of it who don't really need it? Because that is the argument that is offered quite often.
You know, certainly there is maybe a very small percentage of people that might take advantage of any program that's being offered. But I do really believe that most of the people that are taking advantage of our programs are families that do need to take advantage of the program. Most people are well aware of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, and we really have been working on our nutrition standards. And many of the things that we've been doing in the Eau Claire area were in place even before the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act came into play. So we are meeting children's caloric needs and really staying within those caloric needs. We're offering a wide variety of fruits and vegetables. We're offering whole grains. I think it's important to note, too, that if a family is food insecure, it might not be, you know, we try to offer nutritious foods, but there are other choices that may be made, and sometimes more nutritious items are more expensive for families. So they might be making the choice to have something that's less expensive and maybe less nutritious as well.
And Emily Moore, so people that come to the food bank, I mean, do we size them first? Or I guess that's a silly question, but, you know, this is a concern that people might be taking advantage of programs like yours.
Sure. You know, as I mentioned before, I think that's a very, very small percentage where mm-hmm. that would happen. And, you know, the connection between obesity and food insecurity is actually quite high. It's And Sue alluded to some of the primary reason for that, and that is that healthy foods are very expensive. And so in order to not feel hungry, oftentimes families have to make the choice or do make the choice to get a higher caloric food rather than a more nutritious food. And it's not that they don't know that the healthier choice would be better. They would prefer the healthier choice. They just don't have the income to do it.
Sure. But also people like, I mean, some people, including myself, like that high caloric, you know, food sometimes. David Lee, I want to get your take on this. You know, the argument is that people who might not need the program are these different programs, whether they be nonprofit in nature or SNAP benefits, that are using them or using them perhaps inappropriately. What do you say to that?
Yeah, so, you know, the rates of fraud in the food share program are exceedingly low. They're about 1.5% of the total program budget. So really, really tiny in the comparison of how many people are actually benefiting from this program. But I think just to put a finer point on what my colleague guests have been saying is that, you know, the more nutritious foods are a little bit more expensive, calorie per calorie, right? So when people who have lower means are spending less money for more calories, you know, whether that's at the supermarket or wherever it may be, buying, you know, some of the less healthful foods that stretch their budget, I think that they're actually being exceedingly economically rational, right? If you can make a dollar turn into 500 calories as opposed to 50 calories for a head of broccoli, that is exceedingly rational for somebody. And I would also note that, you know, poor eating habits are not just the province of people who have low incomes, right? Everybody in our nation eats poorly and makes bad choices. I love donuts. If you put a plate of donuts in front of me, I will eat all of them. And so that, you know, requires, that's not a problem of these federal nutrition programs. That is, you know, that is a larger food system issue that we have to address. And just one final point, 70% of the SNAP budget is not spent on soda. People on SNAP purchase at the same purchasing patterns as everybody else, right? So people who are on food stamps buy the same sorts of things as everybody else, which sort of highlights that fact that people on food stamps are just the same as us.
With that, let's take our final break. When we come back, we'll talk more about summer food insecurity and the overall issue of food insecurity. 1-800-228-5615. I'm joined by representatives from the Eau Claire School District, Feed My People Food Bank, and Feeding Wisconsin. If you've got a question or comment, we would love to hear from you. Aaron had a great question that spurred some conversation. Our program, Your Listening Experience, is always better when you chime in. 1-800-228-5615. We'll be back in just a bit.
Wisconsin Public Radio presents an Earthbound Expeditions trip to Costa Rica, January 20th through 30th. WPR host Veronica Rickard will be along to explore the flora and fauna of one of the most biodiverse areas in this hemisphere. Travelers can opt for nature walks and thermal pools, but for the more thrill-seeking soul, there's zip lining and canyoning. Details about the WPR adventure to Costa Rica in January are available at wpr.org/travel.
Support for WPR comes from Glass Nickel Pizza, 19 years of employee and customer-inspired pizzas made from scratch at 8 Wisconsin locations, dedicated to sustainability practices and community support. GlassNickelPizza.com. Support also comes from UW Eau Claire Continuing Education, offering a master's in professional development through education studies. One Saturday a month, the rest is online. uwec.ly/MEPD.
You're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. Next week, guest host Abby Ivory Gagne will take the West Side driver's seat for a discussion about the Circles of Change initiative at UW-Eau Claire. It's an effort to make the campus a more welcoming place for people from all backgrounds. It's a fascinating project, and it'll be a great discussion. That is next Monday morning. If you've missed part of the program or would like to listen again, check out our online archives. They live at WPR.org. Go there, search for the West Side. You will find years' worth of programs, all of them winners, in my opinion. 1-800-228-5615. If you've got a question or comment about food insecurity, summer food insecurity is what we're specifically talking about. Fewer options for families with kids, especially during the summer months when school is out, when that access to free or reduced lunches is not there at during all months. 1-800-228-5615. We have some calls coming in right now. Let's take them. First, we'll go to Daniel, who is either from Toma or listening online in Toma.
I live in Toma.
Toma, all right. Well, Daniel, thank you so much. What's on your mind?
Well, my daughter and me used to go there when I was younger, and it's that it was more like a group of us would go together, and I didn't really go there because they would take my daughter because I was always working.
Go to where? I'm sorry.
At the school. Okay. When the school gave you free lunch.
Sure.
You know, and then the problem you had was some people, like the gentleman just called there, they judge these people because then they had their food stamps, which I was not on food stamps, but they just did the food thing because my daughter takes her own school to work, is they judge them, and then they're restricted what they can buy and what they can't buy, and they won't let them buy healthy stuff because it's not in the government's budget.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
So they have to buy the chips. I don't ever had sodas in my house my whole life. I don't drink sodas. He can't say that. And when I was younger, I was 60 pounds underweight when I went in the military. They made me gain weight.
Huh.
And we were on it, you know, because there was 13 of us kids.
Wow.
And I never ate because I was always running in the sports. But I just, it's
sure.
They, like you said before, choose themselves. They're given no choice but what to eat.
Sure.
Well,
and I think it's a great program, and I'm glad you're feeding the kids and all that stuff. And I think more parents need to go there so they can have a bonding. It used to be a group of people, you know, like there's communication. Kids would eat, the parents would shoot the breeze. Now
sure.
It's more like, oh, my, and the neighbors might think I'm doing this, so now I'm too embarrassed.
All right. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. And Sue Brown.
I appreciate that as well. We really do our best to offer meals that are nutritious. Like you say, we offer a wide variety of fruits and vegetables and fresh fruits and vegetables. During the school year, we're offering 3 different entrees and choices of many different sides. And so we really do try to offer a wide variety. And we don't want to stigmatize the children. So we do invite all children to participate in all of our programs.
Let's take another call. We're just, they're rolling in right now, as they usually do towards the end of the hour. I'm glad to hear it. 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment. Andy and Eau Claire, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I had 3 kids that were in the reduced lunch program, free lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have a comment about this because I was quite irritated with the way the system worked because, you know, I appreciate what its purpose was. But I make good I make a good wage. I make in the mid-70s. And my ex-wife at the time didn't make any. She was in the poverty level.
Mm-hmm.
But between our 2 incomes, we were, you know, pushing pretty almost 6 figures. Well, they only take one parent's income into account when they did that. So when I've heard that she had signed them up for the free lunches, I was quite irritated by it and tried to take them off of that because I was more than willing to pay for my kids' lunches. They wouldn't allow us to do it because it was reducing the funding they would get to the school.
Gotcha. Sue Brown, have you got a comment on that? And I also want to get David Lee on it, too.
Sure. We do have, you know, anyone that is eligible for a food share is eligible for our programs. And I'm not sure if you were separated or divorced at the time, nor do I need to know that. You refer to an ex-wife, but we look at family size and income data. So it's all based on that information, how large your family is and how much income your family makes. And it's based on a percentage of the poverty level. So if your family is eligible, you know, it, like you say, it's based on household size and it's government standards that we're meeting.
Sure. David Lee, I wanted to go to you because this year Republicans in the House of Representatives introduced legislation that would lower the number of students receiving free and reduced lunch meals at school. The measure was aimed at saving money and even included an amendment that would kind of block grant money to states. That seems to be a very popular thing. So that the states can use them or set their own rules, I believe, in providing school lunches. So, you know, there are concerns that people are abusing these programs. You know, a single parent who, if both parents chipped in, they could probably take care of it. But yet one parent might be taking advantage in some people's eyes. So any response to our caller or to the bill that I'm not sure if it's gone anywhere in Congress right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, like Sue, don't need to know people's personal circumstances, and I think that's probably where we want the government to be, right? Not caring about people's circumstances, whether you're divorced, separated, or whatever. If whoever has custody of the children, you know, that's a personal decision for the callers that the government has no business making a determination on. I think, though, with regard to the bill that you mentioned, it has stalled, and actually, in Congress's continual attempts to try to pass a child nutrition reauthorization bill, there has been this pilot program that would block grant the school meals program, as you mentioned. And I got to tell you, this block grant is a really bad policy for these programs that feed that provide nutritious meals for kids and families across the nation, right? Because what the block grant essentially does, it says to states, here's a bit of money, however much money you spent on this program over the last year, we're going to cap it and do with it what you will, right? So maybe it's to provide school meals, maybe it's to do whatever you want with this pot of money. And what that does is that if, let's say, the local economy goes bad, right, in the future, that means that once that cap is hit, once that participation gap is hit, that means any kid who needs school meals after that cap can't get them, right? Because if you only have enough cases for, let's say, 150,000 kids around the state, the 151,000 child up and after gets on a wait list. And I don't think that's how we want to administer these programs whereby, you know, they're already means tested. And if folks are, families are near the federal poverty line, they should be able to take advantage of this 50-year-long tradition of making sure that our kids have the nutritious meals they need to learn and grow.
I think one other really good point with the block grant and not wanting the block grant is we would lose our federal commodities. We get about 20 cents. It's over 20 cents a meal of government commodities that they might be canned fruits and vegetables. They might be frozen fruits and vegetables, chicken, turkey, things like that. We would stand to lose that funding for our students. So it would have an even more significant negative financial impact on our programs. And I think a negative nutrition impact on our programs.
Let's take our final call of the morning. I don't think we'd be able to squeeze any others in. But Linda in Menominee, you are on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I wanted to talk a little bit about the food share and allowing people to purchase pop on that program.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I have know of people that are actually addicted to it and are having a terrible time getting off of it and going to the store and purchasing, you know, X amount of cases at one time because they have to have it. And, of course, that would increase in the summertime. But I think it's, you know, bad of our government to allow people to use taxpayer money for that and get addicted to it and create health problems. And then we pay for that. I also wanted to mention that kudos to the school lunch program for adding salad bar and all those nummies on there for kids. And I think a good thing is to teach in early education, pop is bad for us, fruits and vegetables are good, grains are good, beans are good, that kind of thing. And, you know, some of those kids are actually teaching their parents that we shouldn't go out to eat, we should stay home, we should save money. So I think education is a big plus.
Oh, my gosh, you are channeling my mother there because every time we made a meal at home, my mom told me how much we saved. So David Lee, I want to go to you on this because this is kind of broad. This is beyond the local school district. But the issue of soda, I mean, soda, if you consume too much of it, it's considered very unhealthy. I mean, talk about calorie dense, sugar dense. I know you said that the government should kind of stay out of people's business, but should there be more restrictions, again, on soda, for example?
Yeah, you know, like I think I may have mentioned that, you know, purchasing patterns of people who are on the food share program don't differ vastly from folks who are not on the food share program, right? So I think if we wanted to make a broad policy decision about what low-income people can or cannot buy with their benefits, we may want to consider extending that to everybody.
Sure.
Because, again, the food share, people who are on food share, who are literally only on food share on average 9 months out of the year, they cycle in and out. They're no different from the rest of us, right? They have hopes and dreams. They want to build a healthy family and get them out of poverty, and they want to move on to bigger and better things. And so I think it's important for us when we think about the folks who are participating in the school meals program or in food share or in any local food pantry, anti-hunger program, that they're our friends and neighbors, right? And I think that's the thing we should really focus on, that we care about them, we want them to succeed, and we're here to provide the help, should they want it, to help move them forward in their lives.
So on the topic of nutrition, I don't want to pick on anybody, but I looked at the lunch menu for the Eau Claire Summer mm-hmm. Meal Program. Mm-hmm. A lot of it seems like stuff that I would love to eat, stuff maybe that I should, moderate myself in, but chicken nuggets, nachos, cheeseburgers. Mm-hmm. I know you probably hear this from parents all the time, but are those the healthiest options available? I mean, kudos for the food bar, but...
Yeah, and we do, excuse me, it is all about balance.
Sure.
But if you look at what we're offering, the chicken nuggets are baked. And they've got a whole grain breading on it. That cheeseburger is reduced fat. The cheese is reduced fat and reduced sodium, and it's on a whole grain bun.
And it comes with fruit, with all kinds of other things.
Right, it comes with, and you'll notice that we have fresh fruits and vegetables on the menu as well. So we really are meeting, when we're looking at the students' calorie needs, so we also look at what kids' preferences are. We want to serve the things that they really like to eat.
We've got just enough time. Could we run through what are the options for, at least in the Eau Claire area, for food pickup? I mean... Emily Moore, I'll start with you.
And at the Feed My People website, you can always click on Get Help and find out for the mm-hmm. whole Fortune County area. But special pickups, they're starting today. We have rural produce opportunities in Augusta and Altoona and locally as well.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was referring to this sheet. The weekly dining at the school districts, Flynn Elementary, Lakeshore Elementary, Locust Lane, Longfellow, Mann's Elementary, and Northwoods Elementary in the city of Eau Claire. Also meals for kids through Feed My People Food Bank. Meal bags for kids that are picked up all over at different parts of the city and outside of the... I think there's some...
Yep.
It's all over the place, but you can go to the Eau Claire School District webpage to find more information and Feed My People Food Bank for more information. Thank you to my guests. David Lee is Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin. Emily Moore is Executive Director of the Feed My People Food Bank based in Eau Claire. And Sue Brown is the Food and Nutrition Director for Eau Claire Area School District. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning in. Next week, guest host Abby Ivory-Gagne will take over and host a discussion about the Circles of Change initiative at UW-Eau Claire. Have a safe and productive week. We'll chat again next Monday morning.